We got a question on that. That would really, that would be a bad deal for the person that owns the farm. So if you do some extra evaluation at the time, make sure you can substantiate what you did. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be the highest price in the county that day. But substantiate what you did, give an appraisal, and at least be able to justify it 5 years down the road.
Joe brought a couple of points about seminars and going to see your attorney, and obviously there aren't any silver bullets, and this is probably the most complex issue that any of us are going to deal with in the cattle industry. The problem I have, you know, is how do you go about selecting the attorney or the tax planner? It's been my experience, you guys are a little bit like bulls. Some of you have got better performance numbers than others. And, I mean, it's not an easy. I don't think it's an easy decision. It hasn't been for us anyway. How do you get somebody that you can trust, that's got the experience, that can guide you down this complex avenue?
I'll tell you one thing. If you go to a lawyer and he says, "I know all there is to know," question was, how do you pick a really good professional? Is that the answer?
Yes, sir.
One of the things, if you go to somebody and they say know-it-all, you know, look at the front page of the settlement. I went to a really good firm and got an outside this settlement because it's a complicated area. And very few people are able to have a building as a whole range of legal issues. And professional people in the water are like doctors. They're a specialist. And if he doesn't send his to a specialist, but maybe goes to a specialist himself, that's a good sign. Then the other thing is, you know, the reputation of people, who's done a good job, show you.
It's a hard question to answer. You could live, your ranch could be 20 miles from a little town with 10,000 people population, and three or four lawyers in town, and one of those lawyers might be the greatest state attorney lawyer. You could be 150 miles from the city with half a million people in it. Have a hard time finding a good lawyer, but that's probably likely. I put in that checklist the best advice I could give anyone would be, if you're a serious friends, first of all, if your neighbor, if you know your neighbor just recently undertook a state branch, I would ask that neighbor, are you satisfied with the lawyer development? Bar associations, I don't know if in other states. I've been connected California practitioner for almost 15 years. I'm still a member of the California Bar. But in Nevada, you can call the Nevada Bar Association up and ask for a referral service. Now, in Nevada, we know there are very few specialties that are qualified under the Nevada Bar rules. Interestingly enough, state planning is not one. But in some states, there are certified specialists in state planning that the bar rules allow for that kind of service. If you live in a little county, and I'm thinking of the county of Nevada where the ranch that I manage is, one of my best friends in law school is the judge in that county, 10,000 people in the whole county. I go to the judge. He goes to the same church as you or some Rotary Club. And I say, I just asked the judge, in your opinion, is there anybody in this county who can do this? And if not, who? Judges are, if you trust the judge, that person can know, and it could be a lawyer as well, that this is a judge. It's a serious question. It takes a lot of effort. inquiry, but I think if I was not aware of the personal arrest, it would be like an
account. Yeah, lawyers are only good marshals, and they're worried about him. You know, the best seasoned lawyer in Iowa is a guy named Orville Blake, lives a little town of Victor, not rural Mendy. And he has, you know, big firm lawyers and guys like me go to him all the time for special problems. He gives seminars to lawyers, and it's a judgment call.
I apologize, I've asked more questions now than I should have, but we can't get advice here. We all got different situations. But you could just give us two or three ideas of how you can give it away and still control it and stand the IRS on it.
I would think maybe make it part of your overall estate plan. Okay? Do some gifting in moderate amounts. You can give so much every year. And eventually you're going to run up against the unifying, you know, they don't want you to be able to gift it all the way, not go to probate or vice versa. Limited liability companies are really handy. Certain trusts, you can set up some trusts. You put the money in the trust until your kids get to be. And you figure, when are they going to be grown up? 18, 25, 45? You know? And then and you might set them up for different times. Joe, you getting ready to do that?
Yeah, I shouldn't tell a family secret, but you know, my brother is almost 60 years old, still isn't grown up, so I would. But I think gifting is a good place to start. You can give $12,000 a year as an individual or $24,000 a year as a married couple to as many people as you want every year. And there are some limitation rules, but just for general discussion purposes, every year for as long as you want. And that gift can be anything. It can be if you get an appraisal on a piece of property or one of the ranches in your operation, and it's worth X dollars under that appraisal, and over the course of, let's say it's $250,000 over the course of 10 years, you and your wife can give that to your son and his spouse, or your daughter and her spouse, and that's a tax-free situation, and that has reduced your estate by $240,000 over the course of 10 years. So that's I believe in that gifting thing. Here's another idea. And throw it out for just something to take in and discuss this with the lawyer. God forbid, let's assume you have the family has one of the members of the family has severe medical problems that will require long-term care after you pass away. You can gift tax-free as much money as you want to a medical institution for that person's care for the rest of their life, if you can figure out what the... And that's a tax-free situation that will reduce your estate by whatever that amount of that gift is. Educational institution. You can say, let's say you've got 10 grandkids. You want them all to go to the University of Nebraska. Is that what you're all about? I want them all to go to the University of Nevada, but it's personal. If they go to college and want a free education, they've got to go to Big Red. Give that institution enough money for all 10 kids, and you don't have to worry about their educational needs, and that's a tax-free gift. So there's a bunch of different things like that we can do. Just throw those two out as an example, in addition to the gifting situation. Now, to gift, you have to file a tax return every year, or give a tax return. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to make clear that would be requires that if you file a complaint, you need to write out the law of questions that you get.
No, this is the way this was asking, with that gift that I was just discussing, and I share that over a medical institution, kind of director of education, that that's part of the $25,000 that's, no, it's outside of that. That gift is this free, whatever amount you give. Now, you can't give, it has to be designated to a beneficiary. In other words, the person with the medical needs has to be taken care of. The child with the educational need has to have the education. So again, there's another whole category of charitable giving that you're talking about to the Big Reds and the, you know, the Golden Football Stadium. It costs you $450,000. But that's separate from every year you can give, like tonight, you give each one of our children $24,000 a year, tax-free. You still have to file a new tax return, but you are not subject to good tax if you do that. Your tax rate is
35%.
It's 45% today, and it'll fall to 35% in 2016.
I want to just mention a couple that have been around the time here. This is also your audience. You have a great question. I've seen lawyers sit around all day and they're missing a question. But in terms of your estate, you talk a little bit about kids. As a parent, you know, if you've got several kids, they're different. You love every one of them, but some are more capable of handling money than others. And some may put that money in place that you may not necessarily want. But it's your property. You can have it go where you want it to go. And if you do that, and you might get into the problem we talked about a minute ago, communication is always good. And to the extent that you can sit down with them and explain what your thinking was, may not solve the problem completely, but it'll go a long way. It'll go a long way. A couple of quick other things. In estate planning, after death, there's a couple of things you can do. One, if somebody is getting some of an inheritance and they don't need it, you can explain it. But you got to do it right away and never take it into your estate. But, you know, we get some strange situations. You know, worst thing that happened, have the child die before the parent. But if that happened, it comes back to the parent might want to say, I don't want that to go to the kids. Or a wife, you know, might die. And you can explain them and not have it be part of your estate. If you do that real quick and on time, that will save a lot of taxes. Two things that one thing that agriculture has that's really good, and that's special use value. In that case, the main asset of the state is a farm or a ranch, an agricultural business property, and it's got to meet certain requirements for a certain percent of the estate. You can, and you've got some of the family have run it basically before death and a number of years after death. And if everybody signs off, I'm working right through this, but it's pretty complicated. You can value that property in your state. It's 20-30 away of the code. Once again, some of the cattlemen and farmers did a lot of work on it and did it well. Knowing that if you got a problem, everybody's got to sign off, and they got to continue to operate that business for a number of years. But that, I mean, some of these intermountain ranches, some of this land here in the city, the flat-out valuation of that is unreal. But if you use it as an agricultural property, and there might be a conservation easement or some kind of other non-development easement that would help and would make that property keep it as a ranch, and dramatically lower estate taxes. The other thing you can do is have an installment sale, installment payment. payment on taxes that keeps the farmer rancher having to be sold everywhere. You have a question here?
On this 24,000, say you have a parcel out here that's worth more than that, I'll give it to your siblings. Can this be prorated or work out arrangement that way?
I think it could. Your opinion? Yeah. Might take a few years, and you want to be careful, don't mess up the time, you know. But a good professional board can do that.
We currently have our land and our businesses each set up in separate LLCs. Can we not just add our children as members of those LLCs at some point?
Well, you've done the first thing. You've got a flexible business organization already set up. It's pretty hard for the IRS to come in and cut holes in that. Yes, you can. You can add the kids. You can do some valuations. The LLC is a very flexible business enterprise. There's a lot you can do if it's a good idea. Yes, Pat?
Just back to the question, we've had a lot of concerns that have been expressed here today, and a lot of them have to do with our situation as agricultural producers. How critical is it that the person that we choose to do our estate planning has background in agriculture?
The question is, how critical is it that the person have a background in agriculture?
Not a background, necessarily, but knowledge.
Knowledge?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's more important. Knowledge is very important. But in particular, I may be prejudiced, and Joel can point me at this. I think they at least need an understanding. And they need an understanding of how business works. And, you know, look like they're working to find those people in. But, If you don't understand how an agricultural enterprise works, or even a small business, it's pretty tough to try to explain to them. It's pretty tough to try to explain to some guy who's nothing about agriculture. I would hate to try to explain to Hillary Clinton how a farm ran.
Well, she did have a cattle feature. That's a real important question. And I have a little bit of a take on it, but I think some inversions in what we do and whatnot is pretty important. But I would say it's more important to have the best qualified state planning professional. I err on the side of, does this person really do this all the time? Up on the code provisions, that sort of thing. And do they know anything about it actually? That's a plus. It's great to be on the pages. But here's an example. What I touched on it real quick. In this part of the world, in this part of the ranching world, here's an example of something that we really have state planning professionals, some of the universities and what we do in our field, that deal with the conservation business. We taught a seminar last year in Nashville. The whole hour and 45 minutes was on conservation business, and how that can be a very effective state planning tool for a ranch. If a lawyer doesn't understand how that fits into the big picture, how that riparian area of the meadow in the Mountain West potential conservation easement parcel property, and how that fits into the state plan, that's a minus. Typically, those are floodplains, you're not going to develop them anyway, so give up the development rights of perpetuity and achieve an incredible influx of cash into your estate, or if not cash, then a trust who owns that conservation easement to pay the estate taxes, whatever that's worth. So there's an example of, you know, how it could help. So again, I should just go back to get the best professional you can find, and if they have a ranch background or some understanding of what we do on ranches, that's
question. These planners, here's a little question. Do they have a rating?
We need financial planners?
Yeah.
In some states they do, in many states they don't.
How long does the service last? issue and close the plan statute? How long can they drag it out?
How long does the service have? They need to close the letter after your federal state tax return?
Yes, just so you have all the legal rights in this.
They don't make their limit. I mean, you know, they can leave it open a long time if they find something they don't like. But I think generally 180 days. You get it in on time, and I really can't transfer property until you get that done. Get that closing
point. If you have an agreement with the IRS, you can use taxes on the installment. It depends on the terms of that. If it does extend out, I think it's only 5 years.
Yeah. These last two things I talked about, the installment sale, or installment payment, and the 2032A. The bad thing, and the good thing about it is, you know, you keep the land and keep it going for a long time. The bad thing is, it stays open for a long time. I mean, years. And then they can, you know, you need to keep an active member running that operation. And, you know, you got to dot your I's and cross your T's. Sometimes that's not easy. Well, Kurt, are we out of time?
Yeah, thanks. If you can thank our panelists here for the session. And lunch is in C1 and 2, which is the other side of registration.
This has been a production of Angus Productions Incorporated, the industry's information leader.